back to Dave Esther and Sharon Gill in Oregon, subjects of hauntings. all right, you two, what about this temperature thing? Have you measured anything or seen anything there?
Absolutely. You know, if I can regress for just a minute, Art.
Sure.
When we go into a place to investigate, now, we're amateurs, okay? we learn all the time as we, every time we do an investigation, we learn a little bit more. We take in with us the electromagnetic field meter. We take in a sound level meter for measuring your sub-audio ranges and
sure.
then the higher end. We also take in a thermometer that will measure some of a digital readout
sure.
because you do get a temperature drop or an increase in temperature whenever an entity is present.
Typically what? Or is there a typical?
There isn't really a typical. I recall one story when we were down at the Liberty Theater in Astoria that has three ghosts that haunt them. And upstairs balcony, in one of the chairs with wooden arms, whenever someone sits in it, those arms get extremely hot.
Mm.
And so there the temperature increases. And yet, down in the basement, when you're down there, and we go down there to change some infrared film, it got extremely cold, to the point where you felt like the chills were coming on.
Well, let's try this approach. When you're getting a high magnetometer reading, the entity is literally over or next to the machine, I would say, correct?
That's correct.
At that same point, are you measuring the temperature? And if so, how many degrees in differential have you noted?
That I haven't done. We're so busy tracking the entity, so Sherry can start taking pictures. Because whenever we get a high reading, then she starts snapping
sure.
frames. And I guess it gets so exciting at that point that we don't get everything down at one time.
Of those people that will call you up and say, look, something's going on in my home, or we think there is a haunting, and you go and investigate, how many times do you find something versus, you know, it being a bust?
I'm not certain that we've ever really found a bust. There was... the one evening that we went down to Sellers Arts and Crafts, and it was real quiet. We didn't really pick up anything on the EMF, and I didn't figure I picked up anything on film. So we thought, well, we'll try again when the activity picks up.
Sure.
That was the night I got the picture of the entity behind me.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, I walked up those same stairs with the EMF meter, found absolutely nothing. It's kind of like they can come and go as they want. And I think the only time we can find them is when they want us to be found.
When they want to be found?
When they yeah. want to be found.
Do you think they enjoy people like Dave and Sharon and, some ghost investigators, let's have some fun here?
I think sometimes they like attention. They're like you and I. Once in a while, you like to have attention given to you.
But I think also, Art, we take an approach to our investigations of respect and reverence toward the entity also. Because I think if you're going in with the wrong attitude, it makes a difference.
That's interesting. Brad Steiger did talk about attitude once. You may have heard him on my show. I bet you did.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You remember the story about the ghost with the bad attitude that lifted Brad and several other people up off the floor and let them drop?
Uh-huh.
That came from a bad attitude on Brad's part. He insulted the ghost. All right, very good. We're going to talk about the nature of what it is we're facing here when we come back. You two rest. We've got top of the hour news, and we'll be right back. From an area near Dreamland, this is Dreamland.
Department of Transportation and this station.
Thank you. Kingdom of Nine. You're hearing Dreamland with Art Bell. To participate in the program, call toll-free 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-8255. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at 702-727-1295. This is the CBC Radio Network.
Well, it certainly is. Back to Dave Esther and Sharon Gill. I don't want to call them Ghostbusters because that is not, that's what it is tempting to call them, but they're not because they don't bust ghosts. They just investigate them, find that most clients don't want them gone. So we'll get back to all that in a moment, talk about what a ghost really is. There is a man named John Hanley in Beaverton, Oregon, who runs a very successful home-based computer biz. So successful, in fact, that he was the subject of a cup of Esther and Sharon Gill. Are you two still there?
We are.
Good. All right. I think one of the most important areas to look at first may be what really is a ghost. In other words, I'm a great investigator, and I'm sure you are too, about whether or not we have a life that comes after this one. It is probably one of mankind's biggest questions. And if there are ghosts, and if they are the remnants of or the soul of a departed person, then that is very important evidence toward that, proving that afterlife. On the other hand, if these are fallen angels or some other form of entity that never once was human, it is something else again. Which, in your opinion, is it?
From the experience that we've had, Art, on the last 2 years, the so-called ghosts that we work with or investigated and collected stories on have been, for the most part, the departed souls of those that have lived here.
Mm.
In fact, they've all been Earth. They've all born, raised, and then died here on this planet. And when they've died, they've had, for one reason or another, a reason to stay behind. Instead of going on towards the light or through the tunnel or whatever maze it is that they access into, they've stayed behind. And a lot of them that we've encountered from the stories and from our own investigations have been because of either they're lost or confused, unresolved issues, or they're watching over someone until they feel it's time to go on.
Hmm.
They're not, they're not the fallen angels you hear about. They're not destructive. I guess you work with ghosts, they're a lot like people. You have good ones and you have bad ones. For the most part, do you believe people are good, or the most part, do you believe people are bad? And I guess from that standpoint is how you can evaluate ghosts. When we go in, we don't make judgments. We're very, very upfront. We go there simply to observe and to document and to learn.
Well, all right. You tend to come down, both of you, on the side that ghosts or poltergeists are generally friendly or good. But you say there are indeed good and bad. Now, so many ghosts seem to be manifestations of some tragedy or early or tragic death. Wouldn't these many times be the scarier variety, it seems to me?
I would think so. Now sometimes it's hard to confuse. It's difficult not to confuse maybe a ghost that's tormented with maybe residual energy left behind because of sorrow or pain that's maybe imprinted into the area, which you feel in the form of depressions or anxieties.
Well, how do you delineate? In other words, how do you know whether you're dealing with residual energy or an absolute entity?
From our experience, the only way you can tell is if you have poltergeist events take place, if pranks are being played, or you notice unusual events taking place, where an imprint of residual energy is always there. It doesn't go away. And yet, if you have a poltergeist present, almost always it's like they go in cycles. There'll be a period of time when there's no activity whatsoever, dead as a doornail. And then a little while later, it gets very, very active. And that dies down and goes dormant.
Well, that's what's happened at the Earthen Craft store, it has been very quiet for a long period of time. And now the activity is slowly picking up again, and that was why they called us last week to come in.
Oh, last week?
Yes. Oh, yes. And it was just a couple of weeks ago that we were called to a historic house in Columbia City. And the people there said that the owners of the house had loved the place so much that they feel that the lady is there because she didn't want to leave. She wants to make sure that the house is cared for. And the caretakers have seen this woman at her wood stove in the kitchen in her white apron as she did every day of her life, cooking.
Ooh. And yet people accept this and live with it. Now, if I went into my kitchen and I saw a lady there cooking, and I knew my wife was in bed, it would bother me a lot. I mean, really bother you. We can sit here and esoterically talk about these things, but if they actually happen to you, I just don't see how people could keep it together.
They called us to Columbia City because the caretaker had gone upstairs to the bedroom to change the quilts on the big feather bed. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, found two imprints on the bed, as though two people had sat on the edge of the bed.
Right.
They didn't panic. They called us to come and see what we could find. And then said, we hope you don't think we're nuts, but, and then told us what had been happening there. And they're very comfortable with it. There's no fear there whatsoever.
Yeah, but we also had a story come to us from Ohio. About a lady who'd moved, and her husband had moved in, moved to Ohio from Seattle for a job transfer, and they built a new house. And while he was away on business in February of this year, it was freezing outside, very cold, and she was upstairs and she heard this child crying. And so she walked to the edge of the stairs and she seen this little 10 or 12 year old girl. She was dressed in a blue dress and a white apron and white socks and black patent leather shoes, but she had no coat on. And so this lady called down and asked her if she wanted to have a coat, thinking it was maybe one of the neighbor's children or something.
Sure.
And the little girl just vanished.
Ah.
And this woman who contacted us said that she, you know, thought maybe she was losing it a little bit, or maybe just having a hard day. And then a little while later, she was in the bedroom doing some work, and she heard this little girl crying again. So she ran back out to the banister, the stairs, and looked down, and there was a little girl. This time she walked down the stairs, walked up to the girl, and she put her hands out to give her a hug, but she was crying. And her hands went right through her, and she vanished instantly.
Uh-oh.
And this continued for a while. She thought she was going crazy. Added to this, the next time the apparition came, there was an old man dressed in kind of like the attire of the Grapes of Wrath, with a hammer slung to his side, an old hat he had in his hand. It was like a farm laborer of a Depression era. And they just kind of stood looking at her. And she'd have these visions of them. I call them visions because only she could see them. Once when she was going to a Christmas party, they were in the back seat. And her husband couldn't see him, just her. He started undergoing psychiatric treatment because he was thinking maybe something was, she really was losing it.
Well, sure.
And she called because she'd gotten a copy of the book. She read it, and there were many stories in the book that of very similar nature. And she realized that she hadn't been going crazy, that these were ghosts.
All right, let's try this this attack. You said generally you do not exorcise or attempt to remove these entities, correct?
That's correct.
In your description of ghosts in the first place, you describe them as confused, misdirected, or on a mission, but not necessarily pleased about being earthbound and not having gone on to the light or whatever comes next.
Mm-hmm.
Would not an exorcism be a compassionate thing to do? In other words, when you exorcise a ghost, don't you send it off on the right path?
Not if it doesn't want to go. You know, the belief systems of ghosts and the belief systems of we humans can be quite a bit different. You know, if someone had lived, let's say they were a Chinese, and they practiced the Buddhist or the Hindu belief system, and they died, practicing some type of a Christian exorcism isn't going to make any difference to them because they don't accept that. You know, they leave when they want to leave. It's been our experience that a lot of times that when they're ready to go, they're ready to go, and just by talking to them, they'll leave.
Well, what about the famous old movie, The Exorcist? Based, by the way, I understand, on a true story from St. Louis, or the St. Louis area. And there, of course, it became possession. Have you ever seen an entity move into, or have you investigated, a case of possession?
No, we have not.
Most of the stories that we've related to you in just the last few minutes are the types of things that we encounter on a daily basis.
More the poltergeist kind of deal.
Yes.
Well, it would imply a consciousness, because a lot of the kind of things that you've been talking about seem to be practical joke type things, and that would imply that the entity has a sense of humor.
Definitely.
Emotions, consciousness.
You know, there are times when if you offend them, that the pranks become more severe than if you don't. If you're respectful for them, it seems that they're just, the pranks are like what you'd have from a 7 or 10 year old. Just little mischief things. Nothing of damaging of any kind, just things that are annoying.
Liberty Theater is a real good example of what David was just expressing.
Liberty Theater?
At Liberty Theater in Astoria.
Okay.
If you go in and talk about Paul, which the manager really doesn't like to do because she knows that something will happen if you talk about Paul. ABC News Nightline was in the theater with us. We did the filming for the show before we left the theater. The lady said, I know something's going to happen, I just don't know what. And sure enough, the next morning they went in and the butter container had exploded to a point where the top had flown off, which they never found, but it hit the chrome around the edge of the counter and bent it halfway up.
Oh, brother.
So it was a real impact. But there was butter everywhere, and that had never happened before.
And yet, when NBC came out and did a story the next morning, the next afternoon when the manager opened up for the evening, the popcorn had already been popped for him. There's really no rhyme or reason.
Yeah, see, that's an entity with a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Yet now let's talk about this entity that they, as far as I know, his name was Paul. He was a pimp. Back in the 30s, and he had two ladies of the evenings that worked for him, Lily and
Mary,
and he threw one of them off the balcony when she wanted to get out of the business, and the other lady got her throat slit in the main theater downstairs, and yet these three still continue to haunt there. Paul has appeared to not only the manager but some of the customers at times, and appears as a 6-foot man, dressed in white, very slim, with a Panama hat, white tuxedo, and a devilish smile on his face. And as soon as you look at him, he grins, and he's gone instantly.
All right, I'll tell you a story in a moment. You two, stand by. My guests, Dave Esther, Sharon Gill, the subject, ghosts. Right now, the subject is hard water. It comes, you'll see it on glasses when you try to wash them. We're talking about ghosts, and again, it is very important, and I take a very serious approach to this topic, because I believe there is something to it, as I believe there is something to an afterlife. And this is one method, and I particularly enjoy these two, because they're doing actual measurements and finding actual differences in magnetic flux fields, and they're finding it in photography and all the rest of it. It's a hands-on kind of thing. Dave and Sharon, Is that the way you decided to follow this, as a hands-on kind of operation?
Yes. When we got into it, first, you know, the idea of writing about ghosts and folks taking place kind of got attracted into it.
I started collecting the stories. We got curious. Because, like you said before, if a ghost is real,
of life after death. We tried to eliminate as much as we could that could be explained by, for example, if you're on medication and you've seen something.
Right.
Or you're sick. You know, something obviously that may be induced because of health or medication. But those stories that where the individuals were not on a medication, they were not ill, they were not sane, started to repeat themselves over and over again. So you developed a point of a common thread started running through all the stories. And that common thread kept saying, they're real.
All right. You mentioned a pimp and a couple of prostitutes. Here in the state of Nevada, where I live, prostitution is a legal business in many counties. My county happens to be one of them, my county, Nye County. And there are two houses here, which I won't even bother to name, but they have been haunted for many years by a ghost named Harold. And why do you suppose, either one of you who wants to answer this, that this kind of business, I hope that isn't coming toward you, that this kind of business seems to draw that kind of entity to it? What is it about that business? Any ideas?
Maybe it's not so much the business, Art, as it is the energy that they feel there. It's been our experience that if you have a household with a lot of turmoil and distress,
right,
or anger, resentment,
right,
you're going to draw in a ghost that feeds on that. And the repercussions that you get back are the more violent ones. If you have a family that's, I won't say normal, but has positive energy flow coming from it,
mm-hmm,
where they're in control of their feelings, their emotions, they tend to draw in the entities that feed on that type of positiveness. And perhaps in those establishments you have there, there's some type of an energy feel that Harold enjoys being around. He feeds upon.
Hmm. When we come back here after the break at the bottom of the hour, I would like to ask, in fact I will right now, both of you individually, has there been any time when you've been investigating something and it has scared the hell out of you? No, that's just give me a quick yes or no right now.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
No doubt about it.
All right. Well, then we will come back. Good. I mean, that's really good. That's healthy. And I can't imagine working in that field and not being scared. So we'll find out what it is that scared them the most and take your calls when we come back. From an area near the infamous Dreamland, this is Dreamland.
Continue with your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-TALK. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Or the wildcard line at area code 702-727-1295. 727-1295 in the 702 area code. Now again, here's Art Bell.
Now once again, here I am. Good evening, everybody. This is Dreamland. Dave, Esther, and Sharon Gill are my guests. They have written a book called Twilight Visitors. It is a compilation of many, many ghost stories. And they are not ghostbusters, but ghost, well, buddies would be closer to it, I guess. And we'll get back to them in just one moment. Well, no, let's do it now, as a matter of fact. I've got several faxes in already, you two. And so let me hit you with some rapid-fire questions. From Phillipsburg, Pennsylvania, somebody wants to know about altered states. You know what a psychomantium is, I presume?
Yes.
A sensory deprivation chamber. And would this kind of thing, in your opinion, lead to the likelihood of being able to make contact with entities? In other words, altered states.
That's a good question. You know, when you get into the state that like a shaman would get into to access the higher regions of the mind, I can't answer. I really don't know.
That's fair.
I mean, I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. Have you ever recorded any phantom audio from a mic in an empty room? This one actually comes from my engineer up at the network, Brian. In other words, have you ever put a microphone in there? We all know that sometimes voices show up on tapes.
Right, I haven't, but I've had reports in from people who have done that. I haven't asked for copies of the audio yet, but they have said they have captured on that. We do take a tape recorder with us. Most of the time, it's too noisy when we're there.
In other words, you guys are making noise.
No, normally the family that, or whoever's living there is so excited about the investigation. They just jabber on.
I see. Well, that would make sense. All right. Now, I asked you prior to the break, what has really, truly scared you? And you might both want to respond, or individually or together, I don't know.
What would individually?
Well, I can honestly say that the most hair-raising experience I had was at the Liberty Theater in Astoria. And the manager told us that she would take us on a tour under the stage. Now, this building opened for their first opera in 1925, so it's quite old. And it's like stepping back in time when you go through the front doors. The air is different. The atmosphere is totally different, like you stepped into another dimension or something. And going under the stage, the walls are signed by people like Al Capone. It was quite a prominent theater in its time, and there were a lot of famous people that attended various shows. But going under the stage, it was not only dark, it was eerie. The air was heavy. It was a real strange feeling, a place that the further down you went, the more you didn't feel like you wanted to be there.
Mm.
As you go further under the stage, there are tunnels that run like a maze under the town. It's like a town built on a town, because the town has actually burned to the ground a couple of times. But it was a place that made me feel very uncomfortable, and I told Dave that I felt like we probably need to go back upstairs, because it didn't make me feel good at all.
Okay, Dave?
Mine also occurred in the same building. I had to take the camera down into what they call the ice room, where they keep the ice machine.
Mm.
And that is the domain that Paul hangs out in. And one of their previous employees had blocked open the door with a 5-gallon paint can, a bucket in actuality, and while she was getting the ice, Paul moved that 5-gallon bucket and slammed the door shut on her and locked her in.
Mm.
There's no lights in that room, it's pitch black. And so that's the room I chose to go into, because I had to change the infrared, which, as you know, has to be done in total blackness. And so I walked in probably about 15 feet to the table, and then I had the door closed and walked the table, and I unloaded the infrared that was in there and loaded some more. And as I turned to leave, I literally felt a cold air, a breath of cold air on the back of my neck. My hair at the back of my neck literally stood up, just like I'd see in the movies or something. And I was thinking, my gosh, this can't be happening. And it was everything I could do to keep from turning around, because I did not want to know what was behind me. I couldn't see it, but I just didn't want to know. I walked as fast as I could to the door, because it chilled me to the bones. And I've been to Vietnam. I've been I've been around. That's the first time that I was literally frightened so deeply of something that I couldn't see.
We had when ABC was out, we had a cinematographer with us who was a correspondent during the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And this man did not want to be left alone in any part of the theater. And they walked bravely in, but when we were ready to leave, they were firm believers that something was going on in that building.
Well, there are many stories. I, too, thank you very much, was in Vietnam. And there are many stories about not just Vietnam, but most wars regarding hauntings. And again, of course, in wars, you tend to get people killed in great moments of stress and of various kinds. And those sorts of deaths do lead to hauntings, don't they?
Yes, they do. Well, all right, as an example, when we say haunting, now these people, like a story I have in the book about the Vietnam vet and his fallen comrades. And when after a firefight, each one of them came back and made him promise to fulfill some obligation. And at the time, he didn't realize they were dead, because they looked just like, you know, you and I did. And when he discovered they were dead, he took him 25 years to fulfill his commitment of his promises to them. There are times when these entities will appear in human form, just like they did in real life. And there are other times where you simply don't see them. They're a mist or a cloud or simply a feeling you get, sensation.
That, it's very confusing, and it makes you wonder whether you're dealing with sort of a remnant of a soul or remnant of something, a person, or you're actually dealing with their soul, which is trapped here on Earth, or maybe a little bit of both. The whole area is fascinating and confusing. And let's take a few phone calls. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dave and Sharon. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, is somebody speaking? Oh, I didn't know.
Yes.
I thought you were recording.
No, turn your radio off, dear.
Yes. David, turn it off for me, please.
Yes, David, turn it off.
I just think this program is absolutely fantastic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Am I speaking to...
All of us. Where are you?
All of us. I'm in Texas at the moment.
Texas, all right.
Yes. And I just came back from Europe. I live there. I came back about 2 days ago, and my uncle died, and I'm a journalist, but I don't want to mention that. I don't know if it's on now or not. It's not, is it? I'm just getting screened, am I not?
No, we don't screen calls here. You're on the air.
Oh, am I on the air? Okay, I didn't know this.
Well, when I picked up the line, I said, you're on the air. That's
an
important cue.
I understand. Okay, fine. Anyway, ever since I was a child, I had these feelings. I could see spirits, for example, or people on the other side. And when I was a little girl, I remember waking up and seeing these people in my room. And of course, I went to my father and told my father, when you're 3.5 years old, what father pays attention to a child that's 3.5 and is watching a Dallas football game? None. So, and now, this year, after I'm 40 now, so this year, I talked to my next door neighbor and I asked her, because I'd heard that she talked about these ghost stories and there were ghosts there, and I explained how these people looked like, and she told me you couldn't know them because you didn't move in at the time when this man died. So evidently I saw the man, you know, that used to live there, not in the house, but the house next door, as a child. And now it's 1995, and are you still there? Hello?
Yes.
Oh, okay, fine.
It's 1995.
It's fine, uh-huh. It's 1995, and of course, I can see the other side. It's very easy, but it's very difficult sometimes, too. It's like a television set. You turn it on and off. You turn the loudness. Sometimes it's too loud. Sometimes it's too less. But my uncle died 3 days ago. That's why I came back. And in Germany, he came to visit me. And he said to me goodbye, and he talked about my aunt, and then he left. And I had another miracle story. My nephew was also beaten with a baseball bat here in Texas. And anyway, the priest came in and said he was not going to live. I mean, the doctor said he wasn't going to live, and the priest said goodbye and so forth. And I prayed, and my message from the angels were, he's going to live, he's going to talk, and he's going to walk. where the doctor said he's not going to live. He's probably going to die in the next few days. He won't ever be able to talk or walk. And my message was, yes, he will. So I called my brother and told him my message because they know me. And anyway, after some time of saying that he's going to die, 2 weeks ago, I talked to them again. And they said that he got out of the coma. And the first things he said was, I visited my aunt in Germany. And as I was praying for him, I could feel him and I could basically smell him in Germany. And I told him, well, John, you know what? You've got to go back to your body. It's not your time. Go back. And I didn't know this, but I found this out later. A friend of his died a week before, and these are young kids, okay? And I said to this boy, I said, well, God bless you. May you go to God's hands. Well, anyway, like I said, I talked to my sister-in-law, and she told me, well, Anna, you just can't believe what happened here. And I said, what happened? Oh, gosh, is he alive? What's wrong? She said, no. He woke out of the coma, and the first thing he said was, I visited Aunt Anna, and by the way, she was fighting terribly with my friend. And I said, I was fighting terribly with his friend? I said, no, wait a minute. I prayed for him. She said, no, but he saw it as an argument. Mm-hmm. And in a way, it was true. It probably looked like an argument because I told his friend to go because he wanted my nephew to stay.
All right. Listen, we've got to run, dear, but thank you very much for the story. And here's what it makes me want to ask you to. You have taken pictures of ghosts or entities. Is it not possible that people like this lady, our brain is a fantastically complicated thing, making the best Pentium running right now look silly. We don't understand all about our brain. Is it not possible that some people like this lady are able to see what you can only occasionally catch in photographs?
Absolutely.
Oh,
yeah, there's probably many cases like hers recorded where a person is able to into the spiritual realm, their brains, their eyes are seeing into a frequency range that most of us aren't able to.
Exactly.
And children overall at a young age are able to see into the infrared range where we as adults have grown so far past that we've lost the ability. Animals, cats especially, react.
It is true about cats. You two,
yes.
Hold on just a moment. We'll be right back to you. I have cats, and I can certainly confirm that. Cats are very sensitive to areas and things that we know nothing about. Can't hear, can't feel, can't see. I don't know what that says about cats, but I believe it to be true. Now, I also believe to be true, essentially what that lady said, and they just affirmed, that there are people that can see things that have developed, in effect, an ability that the rest of us, through the noise of everyday living, have essentially simply forgotten about. We'll be right back. How many of you two still there?
We sure are.
All right, good. Here we go back to it again. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Dave and Sharon.
Hi, good morning, Art. I'm glad I finally got through. This is Bob in St. Louis.
Yes, hi, Bob.
And I have a story from about 15 years ago. My mom had died when I was just before I graduated from high school, and she died on a Saturday, and on Monday morning was her wake, and I usually set my alarm for 7 o'clock at that time, and about 6:59, a voice rang out in my room, and I'm a very sound sleeper, and it really is hard for me to get up, and it said, Bob, wake up. And it was really loud and very distinct, and there was neither a female or...